We know that no one can succeed alone. Since the Second World War, more than 120,000 Norwegian women and men have served shoulder to shoulder with friends and allied forces. They have participated in almost 100 missions, fighting for values on which we build our societies. A bridge of trust has been built between our brothers in arms and our allied countries. Some soldiers did not make it home, and many suffered injuries. A few have been honored as war heroes. None should be forgotten.
So, welcome to another episode in Friends and Allies project under Et Øyeblikk, en evighet. And in this episode, we are going to visit the Netherlands, the long-time allies and good friends of the Norwegian army and defense system. We are at the moment in Breda, the academy headquarters for the main education system in Holland. And with me today, I have Major General Richard Opelaar of the Royal Marine Corps. Was that correct, sir?
Yes, perfect.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
So you've been on this for a very long time, but you told me you started up back in the very early days as a Royal Marine. And did you ever think about ending up as a Major General?
No, never. I came up in the draft system to become a reserve officer. And that's for a troop commander of the Marine Corps, which is actually not only for reserve officers, but also for career officers. Of course, a quite challenging course. And I really enjoyed the time, although there was quite harshness in the education. And they suggested for me to go to the Naval Academy to start a career in the Navy with the Marine Corps, which I did. And actually, I don't regret any second of that. I'm very grateful for that I had the opportunity to experience a whole broad variety, not only in training and education, but also on operations and meeting interesting people and visiting very interesting places.
Yes, because you have been operational, so you have been around, and you listed up for me earlier all the deployments you have have been a part of. What was the first one?
The first one was actually quite rapid after the fall down of the Berlin Wall. I remember very closely that we were working on the winter deployment in Norway, and we are looking at the invasion of Iraq in 1991. And in April 1991, we were deployed to the northern parts of Iraq because Saddam Hussein was bashing the Kurdish population over there. So in basic, it was a humanitarian assistance operation. But actually, practically directly after our winter deployment, we redeployed to northern Turkey. And from northern Turkey, we went to the northern part of Iraq. So that was 91 and 93, because it was a whole period of, say, peace support operations. The battalion where I was employed to Cambodia in 93. And also the Balkan region was quite unrestful. In 98, I deployed to the Balkan with my company for a short period of time. And in 2003-4, we deployed with the whole battalion group to the southern part of Iraq. And soon afterwards, we deployed the whole battle group again to the northern parts of Afghanistan.
So you've been where it's happening all the time. Cambodia, what were you doing there?
Well, for the people who are a little bit of our age and might recall that Cambodia in the 70s was the Pol Pot regime. And they killed millions of own population. And we came at a certain stage that the UN was deploying a peace operation in Cambodia in 92. So it was a UN operation, basically. We, as the Royal Navy and the Marine Corps, deployed three battle groups. And I was in the last one of the battle group. So it was a UN operation to provide a secure environment for elections and also how to stabilize the country in gathering as much weapons as you can get, and keep the parties apart from attacking each other, and especially keeping the population safe.
Within all this operation that you've been deployed to, have you ever encountered some moments that you will never forget, that will stick with you for eternity?
I think that every operation is different. Maybe you get deployed to the same country, but in a different time frame, but operations are different because the setting is different, the threat is different, the people around you are different. So your impressions are different, and also your position can be different. Yeah, if you go back to Cambodia, what I recall, we deployed through Thailand, which was quite a modern country. And then we crossed the border and you came back to the Middle Ages because the Pol Pot regime demolished everything that was there. Railroad systems, road systems, electricity. So to come back from a relatively modern society into the Middle Ages, it was also say, whoa, what's happening over here? And that's about the environment and the horrific, threat of mines. I also recall that the population in Cambodia, they knew there were mines, but that they had to grow rice. So they went into the rice fields. We also encountered quite a lot of casualties, civilian casualties, during the mines. I recall there was also a new Norwegian demining organization active in Cambodia. And mines worldwide are a huge threat. So in Bosnia also, in Bosnia, a lot of populations, they don't hate each other from, recently. That history goes back to many centuries. So you see the whole frustration between the civilian population over there is still active now, as it was probably ages ago. That's remarkable, I think. And even the Balkan now is still unrestful. Recently, we deployed a company of Marine Corps also for keeping the situation steady in the Balkans. And it's 2024. So southern Iraq as well. I mean, all the population was scrutinized by Saddam Hussein, especially the Shia population. Well, the Desert Storm, of course, in 1991, but afterwards also we invaded actually Iraq to stabilize the country. Our sector, the Dutch sector, was about the same size as the whole of Holland to get a scope on geography, for instance. And you see how the country and the population has suffered from a strict regime. Yeah, it's heartbreaking if you see that.
Talking about going back in history, before we started, you told me that the Dutch Royal Marine and the British Royal Marine used to fight each other for centuries ago. And now you are cooperating and are working together, especially in the northern flank of NATO, like in Norway.
Absolutely. Yeah, the history between the Royal Marines and the Dutch Marines is more over 350 years. Of course, in those beginning periods, we are fighting each other, duly about economic sense and on power and influence. And more or less in the same time frame, the Royal Marines and Dutch Marine Corps were established. But we also did a lot of campaigns together. We raided Gibraltar together. We did campaigns to Madrid together, in the Mediterranean together. So there is a method and a way of how we understand each other. I think the Dutch and the Brits are quite closer than a lot of people think. And I'm referring to mindset things. Yes, in 1972, the UK Marines and Dutch Marines together in UKNL, a landing force, later on amphibious force, were tasked for the defense of the northern flank. And our main operating area was to be northern Norway. So from that time period on, we try to get acquainted to the circumstances in the Arctic.
Yeah, because you don't have that environment here. It's not that you're riddled with snow and ice and snowmobiles and everything.
No, and especially we hardly have any hills, no fjords. So we have a more moderate climate over here in Norway. It's a harsh environment, but for a training circumstance is ideal. If you not only can survive, but also can move and fight in harsh environments, that brings a very strong unit cohesion to your unit. So therefore, also, when we prepare for operations, we are very happy to go to Norway for winter deployments to get these basic skills, drills, fundamentals in soldiering altogether. And the unit cohesion is essential. So we cherish the environment in Norway.
The collaboration between the Dutch army and Norwegian armies, going way back also, starting in the maybe before the Second World War, but certainly during it with the operations in Walcheren and so on. How do you feel that you are integrated with the Norwegian army?
Well, I think the army, in every time frame, it's closer cooperation and lesser cooperation. It's like a wave. And I think if you understand that you are also reliant on each other for defending your territory, which is for NATO, but also get deployed outside NATO, for instance, to Afghanistan together, you really recognize the necessity that you understand each other and operate with each other. And I think we have more in common than we differ from each other.
And if I can ask you, how do you move into recognition of your soldiers going out? Is it easy to give honors to them, or are there more to do in that area?
I think the greatest appreciation is that you are together as a team, because that goes on for life. A medal is very nice to have. And of course, you have a medal parade, which the family can enjoy also. And they can recognize that their dad or mom have done things abroad. But I think this comradeship, I think that's the best word to describe. That's something you experience together and you keep together the remaining parts of your life.
Something that will last.
Or last, yes. And of course, the older you grow, all events get more romantic.
I'm certain of it.
Yeah.
If we go to the present, you are head of the military academy here. How important is it to educate your soldiers?
I think it's the essence to have military education. It is not a priority 10, it's a priority number one. It's the gateway for our defense operations. So if you educate your officers or NCOs or your men in priority 10-ish, you understand that the quality will drop. So it's the front door for a coherent and a strong defense operations to have military education to the highest level.
How do you conduct that? Do you actively recruit people into the military service, or is it more volunteering?
In Netherlands, we don't have the draft system anymore. It's suspended, to state that correctly, in I think in 95, 96-ish area. So we have a volunteer armed forces. So yes, the young population have to apply to come into the defense operation and defense forces.
Is it popular?
Well, I think it's quite popular. We don't have a lack of interests. One of the challenges nowadays is that we have a lack of personnel broadly through society. Because you see things like education issues and the social health system, they're also looking for personnel and our economy has to drive. So if you go back to the 80s where I came up, we had an unemployment rate for about, say, 8%. And when you finish your university, you were not sure you have a job. Now, whatever you do, there are jobs enough. So you see in a time frame of about 40 years that the whole society changed quite a lot. So you have to provide work, but that applies for every employer, to have challenging work and to keep in touch with your personnel and have this internal motivation. And in the end, I think it's the essence to have the twinkle in your eye, whatever you do.
Very well put, sir. Going to the very present, like when we are doing this interview, we are facing a quite disturbing war in Ukraine, and the feeling of a huge threat is closing in on, I think, most of the Western Europe. What's your thought on that, and where do the armed forces have to go?
I think it's a great part is the mental components. I think as military, you have to be ready at all times for all threats. You cannot be selective on that. Yes, for peace operations, you can select, we go to country A, B, or C for a period of time. You can select it. But where is the essence on survival for your own territory? You can select, you have no choice. And you cannot say, I will be ready in 6 months' time. No, you have to be ready now. So I think that the invasion in Ukraine made for everyone, again, very lively what the essence is, how to defend your territory and your dear ones. And I know this feeling in the Norwegian population is more severe, more powerful than in the Dutch population. You are bordering the Russians. You know the Russians. Some people in the Netherlands think they know the Russians. So the closer you are to the threat, the more imminent you feel the threat.
Being part of operations at the extent that you have, sir, you must have experienced hardship and things that maybe wish you never encountered and certainly want to not forget, but wish you never have seen. How do you cope with that?
I think for all military, especially you listening, they will understand that you will see misery, you will experience misery. But in the end, we are for that. Because when all systems fail, the armed forces have to be there. And for officers means they have to be there to act and lead. So you have to understand that it's not in a peacetime environment that you do your thing in your nice uniform. No, you have to be ready for misery. And each person in life will experience misery from their youth, doing top sports or whatever. And the question is, you cannot prevent that kind of misery. You get it for free. The matter is, how do you take on this misery? For private life, I was married to a Norwegian wife. She deceased due to cancer a couple of years ago. But I'm not the only one. And I know other people have the same kind of misery. We lost our child also. And you see that it can break you, or it can bring you more together, can make you stronger. And that's also what military have. You experience the same thing. It makes you stronger as a person, as a professional. And we know that there are some colleagues who will suffer for that for life. Knowing that, you know that what you are doing is serious business. So whether you get misery in your private life or misery in your professional life, you will get it. The matter is, how do you deal to it and deal with it? And it's very nice that you have some people around you who won't solve your problem, but with whom you can talk and experience, change views, yeah, and how to deal with it. And if you are fortunate enough, which I'm now in my position, that you can project a couple of these lessons to all the young officers, male and female, it's good to give some experience back. But I know they will have challenges in misery, presumably also to a higher dimension than I have experienced in my life. But we have to prepare them to the utmost.
What is comradeship and brothers in arms, all those terms, does that mean anything to you?
Yes, I think it's the essence of military life. You build up a bond with each other due to severe training and education, which humor is a good factor to give this glue within comradeship. But I think something above comradeship, and I think it's friendship. A friendship is irrespective in which position you're in, where you come from, where you're born. It doesn't matter where you're a Marine or a general or a soldier or whatever. It's just because you are a person. And I'm very convinced that if you really think about friendship, how many real friends do we have? If you have about 5, you are a lucky person. That people take you for granted and respect you just because you are, in my case, Richard. I hope that, and I wish that for everything around, every people around. Friends on TikTok or Facebook are not always your friends.
In Friends and Allies, we hear the stories of some of our closest supporters, reliving with them some of their most intense moments. Et øyeblikk, en evighet.